Welcome to this week's edition of the Video News In-Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from In-Screen Media is with me. Hi there, Colin.
Hey, Will. I just got back from the pay TV show in Denver, which was really good. I had a couple of really enjoyable panels. One discussion was about the battle for the living room. Lots of discussion about connected TV devices, and the other one was on Android TV. So that was very interesting for me. I had a great time there.
Yeah, and you're going to be out in New York in a couple of weeks at my conference, our 9th annual video advertising summit. You're going to be doing a session there on mobile video.
I am, and I'm looking forward to that one too. So yeah, we've got Elation, Panthera, and a couple of other really interesting companies there to talk about mobile video. But that's not what we're going to talk about this week, right?
Yeah, well, we are talking advertising and sort of tease up a bunch of the conversations that we'll be having in a couple of weeks in New York. But you and I have both been avidly following some of what's been coming out of the upfronts this week. TV networks doing their annual pitches to advertisers. And seemed like one of the big things that was emerging was this ongoing battle, if you will, between the digital giants, namely YouTube, versus the networks, and everybody sort of vying for their share. And you and I were both taken by a couple of articles that we saw related to the brand safety issue, which of course has been a real problem for YouTube for a lot of different reasons, different videos that have surfaced, a little bit of a whack-a-mole game for them, and the TV networks by contrast saying that we offer premium-only environments, and for those reasons you can trust us more and should be placing more of your spending with us. And we both noticed a article in Reuters quoting some data from Media Radar that surveyed 240 companies that are spending on YouTube, said that 46% of them actually decreased their spending since last year on YouTube, and only 8% of them actually increased their spending on YouTube, and that they were starting to actually spend more on some of the network's online properties. So that would be something like a CBS All Access. Interesting there. Certainly linear audiences continue to decline. We've followed that. We've talked about that many times in the past. But advertisers still seem to be drawn to those few occasions where people are watching in a linear way, because it's really sort of their last opportunity to get their message in front of millions of people at the exact same moment. And that linear audience, again, is shrinking. On-demand is growing. Certainly the ad-free environments like Netflix and Amazon continue to grow. So for advertisers, they're sort of being narrowed into a ever smaller corner of people who watch at the same time, and also people who are watching premium content guaranteed to have their messages in front of adjacent to premium content. And those are certainly the key messages that the networks were driving home this week.
Yeah, that I got to tell you, Will, that was a big subject at the pay TV show. We talked a lot about how advertising revenues within the traditional television ecosystem are still holding up pretty well. I think there's been a small decline, but it's still roughly about $70 billion a year. And there was a lot of discussion about why more of that revenue hasn't moved over. And I actually, one of the things that that came up, I think, repeatedly was the emergence of these what I've been calling fast services like Pluto TV and Xumo, which are sort of linear online that deliver very similar experience to traditional linear television, and are completely free ad supported services. And you know, I think that there are plenty of safe places now emerging online that actually have pretty good reach. So if you look at, say, Pluto TV, they're saying they've got 15 million active users, and that's that, you know, the ads are being placed against curated content in these micro channels that, that Pluto TV provides. That content is getting augmented mightily now that Viacom has it. They're putting a lot of the premium TV content now is showing up in Pluto TV channels. So that is premium content against which advertisers can place ads. One of the points, actually, there was a gentleman from Zumo on one of the panels, and he made an excellent point. Well, he said, if you place an ad with Zumo, that ad is unskippable. There is no DVR. So if people are watching that channel, they will see your ad. And actually, rather saying watching that channel is the wrong thing, right? Because the other thing about those services that's much improved for the advertiser is that the ads are targeted. So you can reach a viewer no matter what channel they happen to be watching on Zumo or Pluto TV. So I think the idea that there is something exceptional about the safe content in traditional TV, I think that idea is really not true anymore. There are plenty of places online where you can place safe ads and have them be seen in a very safe environment and a traditional linear environment will.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, you're right. There are definitely alternatives emerging. Excuse me. I think the point that the networks would make is that they still enjoy the greatest reach, and they're going to be able to aggregate the biggest audiences in these still relatively scarcer, linear viewing experiences. And so it may not be quite as targeted as you were just describing some of the digital players can offer. But in terms of reach, it's still the biggest game in town, and that matters a lot to advertisers when you're spending big bucks and trying to move the needle and trying to put together campaigns as efficiently as possible. Those types of audience sizes are still very relevant.
They are, Will, but you know, if you look at what Viacom has done, they've put together a suite now of distribution mechanisms for their content that allow them to reach, they claim, 80 to 90%, I think, of 18 to 34-year-olds. But they can only make that claim because they have Pluto TV, and they also are doing distribution on social media, including YouTube. And that's the way that they can get the reach, because that demographic is moving very fast now away from traditional television. As you know, Viacom's revenue to advertising revenue has been falling quite fast, and it is only in the last quarter that we've seen the declines slow. That I put down to the digital outlets that they have, namely Pluto TV. So the other thing I wanted to say is that, you know, YouTube does have lots of problems. They've had these adpocalypse. I think they've had three major adpocalypses now. And, each time advertisers have left. But, you know, each time they've come back. And I don't know if it's true that 46% of advertisers have... No, the major advertisers are spending 46% less with YouTube or not. But if they are spending significantly less, I think that they're probably not reaching particularly younger audiences in the same way that they were when they were spending that money. And that's why people come back, because YouTube has probably... It is the video platform in the US today, and maybe the world today, with the best reach bar none. Everybody watches videos on YouTube. Everybody. And you know, not everybody watches traditional TV. Not everybody's using Hulu. Not everybody's watching Pluto TV, but they are all on YouTube. So it's sort of an unavoidable platform, and yes, they're struggling with with brand safety. But they do have a pretty brand safe option in the YouTube preferred program. So, you know, you can rail against YouTube all you want. Advertising dollars, a lot of advertising dollars are going to continue to be spent there because that's where people are.
Yeah, no question. And just to circle back on that quote in the Reuters article, it was not that they spent 46% less, but that 46% of the 240 companies that had advertised on YouTube in last year's first quarter had spent less. So it wasn't 46%, 46% of them spent less. Now, who knows if they spent, you know, 1% less, 2% less, 5% less, or they've come back during the time. I think your point is very well taken that when you look at younger audiences in particular, it's hard to be a brand, hard to be an advertiser looking to reach those younger viewers and not advertise on YouTube. So whether it's trying to go with Google Preferred, the narrow slice that's guaranteed and is supposed to be premium, or sort of taking your chances or trying to vet the ads further down the chain that may be even more targeted for the type of products that you're trying to sell. It's a complicated environment for these advertisers. And certainly there's sort of good points all around. Networks make good points about guaranteed brand safety, but YouTube can make great points about targeting younger audiences and the Google preferred option. So for an advertiser, it just seems like it's ever more complicated environment to get through.
And I do understand that's why television is still very attractive, right? Because it's an easy buy. You know what you're buying there. You know what you're getting. And this, you know, one of the problems, of course, with online is that we still haven't reached a point where it is an easy buy. It's very difficult. You know, buying an ad on YouTube is very different to buying an ad on Hulu and just about every other property that's out there. Probably the simplest buy, I think, is probably buying an ad on Pluto TV because they're probably standard 30-second slots and you can just reuse inventory that you're using in traditional TV. You know, this as I say, this came up frequently at the pay TV show, but I was also, it made me think a lot about what Roku has been saying and what Anthony Wood has been saying. That we're sort of in an interesting situation because we have a lot of the viewership and the viewing hours is now starting to transfer online, but the advertising dollars haven't followed yet. And I guess this will be a big topic at next at the Ad Summit, Will, right? Because fixing this environment, this online environment, so advertisers can make the easy buy and can feel confident that their ads are going to be shown against safe content is probably the number one thing on the agenda of the online platforms, without question, right?
Yeah, and I think you mentioned Roku, and Roku will have Allison Levin from Roku speaking at the Ad Summit. And that's yet another, I think, really interesting angle on all this is we see Roku emerging now with nearly 30 million active accounts, and Amazon certainly has a huge base with Fire TV, and you look at Google with Chromecast, et cetera, and you start to wonder what role the device companies are going to be playing in the future as well, because they're controlling their own environments also, and also offering targeting. So they, I think, become a very credible supplemental party in this advertising ecosystem. Not just they sort of become an intermediary representing content that they'll argue also is premium content based on the vetting that they do. So that's another, I think, angle on all this to be explored. And then one other thing that I would say also, I don't know about you, but I have really noticed in my online travels more and more autoplay video popping up in the lower right corner. I'm sure you've had that experience also. And I've seen this on some prominent properties now also, these The idea of autoplay and advertising, advertiser-supported autoplay, and that I think just sort of reinforces a little bit of the Wild West environment that still exists in online video. You, as an advertiser, you put money into some sort of an exchange, or you know, who knows where your ad is going to go. It starts showing up against autoplay video. People aren't even paying attention to it. But they're being counted as impressions. And so I think that's yet another angle that TV networks have, is that it's a tried and true, well-understood medium, whereas online video, there's still some, I think, some real quirks to it that make it murky for advertisers.
There are, but we've got, let's be honest, Will, traditional TV has some of the similar problems that you have online today. So let's look at how you count a view, right? The way Facebook counts a view is, you know, if you're watching for 3 seconds, that's a view. And the problem is they're using autoplay. So you're scrolling through your feed. And just like these other sites that have pop-up autoplay videos, and you just pass across a video, you don't really look at it at all. You're just looking for something else. That's counted as a view. YouTube counts, you have to watch for 30 seconds for it to count as a view. But let's be honest, how much viewing is taking place now in DVRs, on DVRs? And, well, some people can skip the ads completely, don't even see the ads in the content. I know that I've got my TiVo and I can skip the ads completely. So how do you can't count those as a view. So I think TV's not Lily White here.
Well, that's a very fair point. And again, all of it, I think, underscores how complicated it is now for advertisers to figure out how their messages are going to be seen and where they allocate their budgets and making sure that they're in safe environments. So no easy answers here. Certainly a lot of these questions we're going to talk about at the Ad Summit in a couple of weeks. But we also want to leave a little bit of time today, Colin. You just finished up some research looking at the European market, a few countries in particular, that also reveals the extent to which people are still attached to network TV.
Indeed, I did, Will. And the research I did, I fielded the surveys in Sweden, Germany, and the UK. And what I was really trying to get at here was I wanted to get, you know, when I look at data, we both look at data all the time, it's all chopped up, right? So you look at the online stuff and you look at the pay TV data, and I wanted to get a more holistic view of how people are watching across the services. So I was very fortunate. I was chatting with Graysnote and they loved the idea and they stepped up to the plate and they sponsored the research. So thanks a lot to them. Because the research is available free from the site. People can just go download the survey, the report, TV Universe, it's called, UK, Germany, Sweden, how people watch television today. And there were some pretty surprising results, which do contrast. Some of it contrasts, some of it is in sync with what's going on here in the US. And I should mention that streaming services came to Europe a little bit later than the US. I think Netflix launched in the UK and Sweden 7 years ago, and Love Film, which is now Amazon Prime Video, launched in Germany 9 years ago. And over that period, the biggest, the most surprising finding was that online TV now is the second most popular source in all three of those countries. And when I talk about source, I mean there's free-to-air TV, there's pay TV, and there's online TV. That's, you know, the three main places where we get our television. And for online TV to have knocked off another source of television services that has been in market for decades in just 7 or 9 years or whatever, in a relatively short period of time, is, I think, pretty amazing, a pretty amazing finding of the survey. And in fact, there's a surprising number of people also who use all three sources. So, for example, in the UK, 17% of people use pay TV, free TV, and online TV. Slightly smaller groups in Sweden and Germany doing that too. So that, of course, contrasts pretty sharply with the US, where I think there's only about 15, 16 million people that are using free to air in the US, and I should say 15 million or 16 million homes, not people. Whereas, you know, I think 60% now are using online TV sources like Netflix and pay TV sources rather like Netflix. And of course, penetration of pay TV, I think, is hovering just below about 80%. So that to me was really interesting results from this research.
Let me just jump in for a second. When you say online TV is the second most popular, first of all, online TV means streaming options, whether it's Netflix or Amazon or any other streaming service that's available.
Yeah, and this is a very open definition, Will. So I would actually include in that if they're watching broadcaster apps from TV providers, or if they're even using their TV everywhere portals from their pay TV provider. So that all gets counted in the online TV part, because I really just wanted to look at if people were watching online, if people were watching through pay TV and free to air, those three main sources. So that was the objective there.
Yeah, and when you say it's the second most popular, the most popular is still what? Free to air?
Well, it's different in between Germany and the UK and Sweden. In the UK and Sweden, pay television is still the most popular. Although I will say the gap between pay TV and online TV is pretty slim in Sweden these days. In Germany, it's free to air that still dominates, and online TV is more popular than the traditional pay TV sources. So that's quite a surprising finding in the report. I'll give you a couple of other highlights. I mentioned broadcaster apps and I mentioned TV Everywhere. Now, TV Everywhere, of course, is very popular now in the US. There's been a lot of effort expended by the operators to get us watching on their portals, and I think that's had broad acceptance. But it's not as well used in Europe. And I think that's probably because it's not been promoted as heavily and it's not been available as long as it has been in the other areas. But one area that has absolutely been embraced is the broadcaster apps. Now, here, of course, in the US, I think broadcasters have been kind of reluctant to jump into free-to-air. And in fact, the biggest success we've seen is with CBS All Access. And that, of course, is a pay service. But that's not the way things have evolved in Europe. What the European broadcasters have done is they've really gone all in on their broadcaster apps. And they have services that blend traditional free-to-air services with the online apps. So it's really easy for consumers to switch from a broadcast television channel onto an online, on-demand piece of content. In fact, you may not even be aware that you have done it. So that's also quite a big difference there, that the free-to-air broadcasters are really committed now to delivering online. And I just want to say there was a couple of other points that I thought were really interesting. The online viewers, it's completely dominated by the smart TV or the connected television, just like it is here. And the smart TV, that is a device that doesn't need anything else to stream video except the television, that's the most popular way. And streaming media players is the second most popular. And interestingly, Fire TV is the most popular player in Sweden, Germany, and the UK. Even though I think Apple TV has probably been in market longer in those markets, the power of Amazon's marketing really showing its head there about getting people to use Fire TV. And in fact, I had somebody from Amazon on my panel on Tuesday, and they confirmed, at least to Germany, that they see Germany and the UK as being two of their biggest markets. Of course, I should mention Roku isn't available in those markets standalone.
Just say that, yeah, it speaks to the opportunity for Roku, and also speaks to how popular streaming and online video have become over there. It sounds like it's really become a key part of the viewing diet.
Yeah, it sure has. But anyway, I think we've run a little bit over, so I think we're probably done. But I do, please come to the site and download that report. It's called the TV Universe Report, and it's completely free.
Definitely sounds like a good one. So, Colin, we'll continue this discussion in a couple of weeks at the Ad Summit in New York. Encourage our listeners to take a look. Registration is still available. And thanks, everyone, for listening in this week. And we'll be back again next week.